And early light, what so proudly is, and twilight last evening, whose bright stripes and bright stars, through the perils of tide, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's river, over bursting in.
Okay. This is being recorded, but if it is, it'll surprise a few people. That's Allison's baseball. You have to be careful with that. I think everybody here knows who I am, so I don't think I need to introduce myself. I thought I'd just explain a few things about why we're having a session like this. I happen to be a baseball fan, and I take a lot of ribbing for that. Karen gives me a bad time because the largest book in my academic library is the Baseball Encyclopedia, to which I make frequent references.
Have you ever heard of the Dodgers, by the way? If you haven't, I'm going to walk out. I'm from Los Angeles. Yeah, big gold Dodgers.
Well, Dodger fans are always the most vocal ones I've discovered. So I understand.
And when they're winning, anyway.
Yeah. It's been a bad season for the Dodgers. 2 years ago, I taught a course called Baseball and American Values at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it was the first time I'd ever done a thing like that, and I'm going to do it at St. Olaf now. But I've been intrigued by a number of things about the game of baseball, which we have called for a long time the national game, and I have wondered what it is about baseball that has made it such a part of our American culture. I'm constantly amazed by the role baseball has played in our culture. For instance, coming up here to this isolated mining camp in the mountains. What do we have down the road? A baseball park, complete with decayed bleachers along the first baseline. Now obviously, and there's seats for a couple hundred people at least there, obviously baseball was a central part of the recreational life of the people who came to this remote spot where I wouldn't have thought there was enough flat space to have a baseball field. Earlier this summer, Karen and I went out to a tiny little town in South Dakota called Columbia, which was celebrating its centennial. It's a town of about 50 people. It's one of these half-block main streets that you hardly have to slow down for, and it's a couple little old ruined shops. And people came thronging from all over the United States. People who had grown up there, had gone to high school there. It doesn't even have a high school anymore. And they had a 3-day centennial celebration.
They even had a major league ball field in that town.
Right. But the first day, the whole day was spent playing baseball. What they decided to do as a town to celebrate the centennial was to renovate the ballpark in the village park. They had built new concrete dugouts, remade the infield, new light fixtures, and all afternoon of the first day of the celebration, there were three-inning baseball games between 10-year-old girls, and another game between 10-year-old boys, and then was a game between the 12 and 13-year-old girls, and then the 12 and 13-year-old boys, and so on. 6 or 8 baseball games run after another, and that's where everybody was, at the ballpark. And I would not have thought that in the farming country of South Dakota, that would be the central focus of their centennial. And then driving out here, heading into the even more desolate and bleak western part of South Dakota, 40 miles west of Pierre, 5 miles from the nearest town, which is even smaller than Columbia, at an intersection of two highways. There are the big spires of lights again surrounding a baseball park. And out in absolutely nowhere is this big baseball park where Karen remembers her father playing games that were attended by hundreds and hundreds of people. Why should that, of all things, be out there on the plains? Just yesterday I was reading a Canadian novel, Surfacing, by Margaret Atwood. And in it there's a scene where two groups of Canadians meet in canoes in the middle of a northern Canadian lake. First thing they discover about each other is that they're fans of the New York Mets and they're out there trading baseball scores. Even in the Canadian novel. Well, all of this puzzles me a great deal. But Jacques Barzun, who is one of the great men of letters in this country of this century, made this statement: whoever wants to know the heart and mind of America had better learn baseball. That's a powerful statement to make. Well, I discovered that my interest in baseball is partly genetic. My father, who took me to my first Major League Baseball games at Wrigley Field in Chicago back in the 40s, told me that his father, who was a Norwegian immigrant and a seminary professor of Hebrew and Old Testament, and of the old Haugianer Synod, the pietist movement in Norway, of whom I've only seen unsmiling, grim, stern pictures, it turns out, was a baseball fan. In the early part of this century, he had a two-year assignment in Persia for the church. And one day, Dad said, he came back from his 2 years, this was before the days of telegrams and airlines and so forth, and the family didn't know when he was going to arrive. He walked into their home in St. Paul, Minnesota, on a Sunday noon when the family was sitting down at dinner. They hadn't seen him for 2 years. They hadn't known this was when he was coming. He walked in and kissed his wife, said hello to the children, and turned around and left because the St. Paul Saints were playing a doubleheader that afternoon downtown. And then one of my colleagues at St. Olaf, who had attended Luther Seminary and had had my grandfather as a professor, said that Grandpa used to cancel all of his afternoon Hebrew classes during the first week in October so that he could listen to the World Series. Now that, I think, is a real commitment to the game. And I realize that whatever eccentricities I have, I come by naturally. And now my daughter Allison wants to be the first female member of the Minnesota Twins as her main vocational goal. So it's carrying on. Well, I want to say a few things about baseball. We can't possibly cover all the topics that I claimed in that little announcement. But I would like to make this an open forum where we talk with each other about our perspectives about the game and what it is about us as a people that would lead someone like Jacques Barzun to make that kind of a statement. And some of us might claim that baseball is not or is no longer the American game, that football, professional football, for instance, is taking over. If so, what does that say about us as a culture? Is there anything about the things we cherish and value that is signaled by that rising interest in professional football? I've just begun to read this book called The Joy of Sports by Michael Novak, who is a theologian. He has a chapter on baseball in it. And since I didn't bring all my baseball materials from which I could quote and my notes and so forth, thought I would just say a few things, that a few observations he's made about baseball as a kind of kickoff. He talks about baseball as being
How about a first hit?
Kickoff. Thank you. That's a bad metaphor. I apologize. I'll try to keep with the right game. He talks about the religious aspects of American sport and baseball in particular. We all have different definitions of religion, but he lists a number of characteristics that he says are common to most religions. And as I read off this list, think about how baseball participates in these religious aspects. It's organized and structured. There are usually ceremonies associated with religion, rituals, vestments, great concentration and intensity during certain parts of religious experience, self-denial, repetition, experiment, the development of character. Religion heightens one's sense of human danger, contingency, chance. Religion usually has a rootedness, that is, there's a local turf, a beginning place, a geographical place, for the, at least the beginnings of a religion. It's consecrated days and hours, cycles of recurrence, heroic forms and persons, patterns of symbols and myths, and of course, its temples. Now, I think we could make a case for the way in which baseball does exhibit all of those characteristics, maybe in a more striking way than any other sport that we have. But then a few other things about the sport. I like to talk about the what you might call the metaphysics and the aesthetics of baseball. For instance, especially in comparing it with football and other sports, baseball is an extremely orderly and reasoned game. And the first thing that's done in all games, even before the national anthem, the managers meet, exchange their lineup cards. It's ordered. They have to then play the players in the order in which they hand their lineup cards to the umpire and the opposing manager. They go over the ground rules of the park so that everyone is clear on the rules. All this kind of structure and order. It exhibits a delicate balance of power between offense and defense, especially between the pitcher and the batter. And it is a very delicate balance. The distance from the pitching rubber to home plate is, you all know that, 60 feet, 6 inches. That will probably never be altered, because if it were 60 feet, period, it probably would be too tough for the batters to maintain a kind of a fair chance with the pitchers. There was a great outcry a few years ago when it was decided to lower the height of the pitching mound. I can't remember how much it was lowered, 2 inches, something like that. The pitchers seemed to be getting too much control over the game, so their elevation was lowered just slightly. The heights, the distances, the weights of the bat and the ball are extremely precise and regulated. There's a quantification of everything in baseball, and here I think is part of the fascination for us as a culture. The statistics that we keep with baseball about everything, every pitch, every strikeout goes on the record of both the pitcher and the batter, and the catcher gets a put out. All of these things are recorded in baseball encyclopedias. One writer has called baseball a festival of angles and inches. The slight nuances of the angle of a pitch, the spin of a pitch, how close a ball is pitched to home plate, how close it goes to the foul line, whether it's fair or foul, all that is a precise matter with baseball. There's a kind of mysticism of numbers, even. There's 3 players in the outfield, 6 in the infield part, 9 on the team, 9 innings, 3 outs per inning. With multiplication of 9 is a little mysterious. It's 90 feet between each base, so that when you hit a home run and circle the bases, you've covered 360 feet, same number of degrees in a complete circle. Leads one to ponder how this was all determined. When you think of spaces in baseball, especially in comparison with games like tennis, basketball, and football, where the boundaries are clearly marked. In baseball, only one corner of the playing field is precise, down there at home plate, the heart of it. And one thing that's required is that there be a 90-degree angle at home plate, stretching out how far? It's not determined precisely. The outfield walls are in different angles, different distances from home plate. So unlike a football field, every football field has the exact same dimensions as every other. Baseball is different. The outfield is different in virtually every park, except some of these new clone parks that all look the same, the big circular stadium. But the part of the charm of Fenway Park is the green monster, the 40-foot high wall in left field, because the wall is so close to the home plate that they need to make it that high to make it harder to beat a home run. Or the tangled ivy on the walls at Wrigley Field, where baseball will sometimes get stuck and an outfielder can't pull it out as a batter circles the bases. That's a kind of eccentricity and departure from strictness of space that you don't have in basketball, football, and some of the other major sports. And then another major thing about baseball is time. Most of our games are clocked. There's a clock, and we have our eye up there, seeing how many seconds are left. You put your two-minute plan into effect in football. In baseball, there is no clock. The game proceeds until it finishes. It may take 5 hours to finish a game, it may take an hour and 40 minutes. One never knows at the beginning of a game how long it will take. And a single inning can take just a minute, and the next inning might take half an hour, depending on what happens. And it's those kinds of surprises and irregularities that make it special. Major leagues were begun in 1876, and baseball was begun sometime before that, a decade or two before that. It was attributed to Alexander Cartwright or Abner Doubleday, the two fathers of baseball who invented it. Most of our games have a kind of martial or military sense where you're trying to cross the enemy's boundary or take something, a football, say, or a soccer ball, and move it across the enemy's boundary. Baseball doesn't have that sense. What one tries to do is to get home, not to capture, move into enemy territory. The best thing you can do is to hit the ball so hard that you have free access to trot home at your leisure. And you try to get back home instead of trying to penetrate enemy territory. A different concept. Naismith, who invented basketball, was trying to invent a game where you try to cross a boundary or move a ball past a plane, as an end zone has a plane demarcating a boundary, decided he would try to move that boundary out of the place of physical contact. What he thought of was putting the plane up 10 feet high above our heads, so that instead of having brutish people guarding a boundary and having to crash through them in order to score points, you would try to penetrate a plane that was way above your head, and where you couldn't possibly have a person there to crash through, and therefore the game would be more graceful and delicate. Well, we see what's happened with professional basketball now. That original concept is gone. Well, that's enough talking for me. Maybe that was Mark's ideas or impressions that you have about the game, or what it is that intrigues you about it, whether you think it's going downhill or is still a great American game, or maybe you aren't interested in the metaphysics and the aesthetics of baseball. Some people think it's
indoors. Baseball play indoors.
Well, yes. in Seattle and Houston.
What are the feelings of baseball fans about the game being moved inside, controlled environment?
Well, some people love it, and I assume those are people who eat at McDonald's. And others dislike it. There's big controversy in Minnesota, some of you know right now. It's been raging for years about whether to build a domed stadium in Minneapolis for the Minnesota Vikings and the Minnesota Twins. And there are a lot of Minnesotans who think this would be a sacrilege for both sports, that they're meant to be played on real turf rather than on artificial turf. And it's to be played out in the open air, where you sit in the sunshine, drink your beer in the bleachers, eat hot dogs, have a sitting out in a balmy night. Right. Some people don't like getting snow down. Or having games rained out.
I want to get snow down and have a good game.
You do like it.
Yeah. Wrigley, who believes that baseball shouldn't even be played at night. No light.
Right.
The only field in the nation with no light. And also, it's a real park. No advertisements around all vines and grass.
Well, that's kind of a good idea. I mean, that's a lot of energy to put out all the way.
That's right. But he's done it on principles other than energy.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't want to talk the money.
He can afford it. You know, he gets his money from Gump, and he could afford lights there. But he thinks that one thing, it would disturb the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in...
Well, it's his son now, yeah.
It's what?
His
son, yeah.
But he's keeping the same.
He's keeping the same policy. Their residence is all around it, you know, jammed up around Wrigley Field, and... Some people would be bothered by lights. But
where do people park?
All over.
They take the L. No, they come by train and bus, and they walk.
Oh.
Chicago is, it's interesting to think of the territorial aspect, the rootedness of a religion. Chicago's divided into Northsiders and Southsiders. You see your baseball at Comiskey Park or at Wrigley Field, and you identify yourself by whether you're a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan.
I can relate to that because when I first visited Ann in Chicago, they live on the north side, Ann's family, who first brought me home. And I could have asked anybody in that family, they're avid Cubs fans, and they could tell you exactly where they were. I'm sure that none of them had the foggiest idea of where the White Sox were, and they probably couldn't even name, say, three players on the White Sox team. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's right. And of course, one of the major disruptions to all of this was when the Boston Braves moved to Milwaukee in 1953. And it was the first time in a half a century that there'd been a major change in the nice, neat 8 teams in each league. Now we have 12 teams in each league. 14, right. We're 26 teams instead of 16. And the teams have moved around. The Dodgers are no longer in Brooklyn. What happened to you when the Dodgers moved from Brooklyn, or were you not a fan until they moved?
Boy, were we excited.
You were already out there.
Yeah.
And they were your team in the first place.
Yeah, I used to love the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Okay.
Well, how do you argue with people who say it's a boring game? I should think it's a boring baseball game.
Okay.
That's the question. When we lived in San Diego, we went to the Padres all the time, and the games were dreadfully boring. And we would go to the next one, and we'd love it.
And what do you say to the people who live in Seattle, you know? All they do is lose.
Or Chicago.
They've won 64 games this year.
Well, is winning
everything.
Is winning everything in baseball?
No.
Everything. You got popcorn, hot dog, beer.
We do baseball
chicken.
I don't know anything about baseball, so I'm not a baseball fan. Is baseball as much fun when your team isn't?
It's a much more social event than football.
Football,
I think football really loses, gains from TV because of huge amounts from the network. But football is the kind of thing that if you go to the game, there's so much going on in the field, and everybody, you can't see anything, but you try, and it's so hectic that it really loses. It's so much better on TV.
Yeah.
But baseball, it's such a social event, and it goes slow enough that you can have a good time.
Yeah.
You have a general idea of what's going on.
Can you talk to people around you?
But I think that all depends on where you are, and like, okay, there's a famous Chicago Cubs fan. If you are a Cubs fan, you have agreed that you will always be a Cubs fan no matter whether they win or lose. So winning is not a big thing. It is a very social thing. But then you can also go to certain football games where tailgating out in the parking lot is a lot bigger deal than actually watching the game. I mean, on a college level and on a pro level.
Right.
But I think it depends really where you're at and what city. I mean, if your city has a history of winning, like, you know, the Yankees, you know, it's really important for them to be in first place, whereas in Chicago it's not.
One day I went to
ask other people. So I went to a game with Philadelphia Flyers versus the St. Louis, somebody or other.
Phillies.
Yeah. And it was a mammoth big stadium. And everybody just was there having a good time, and they spent the whole time running around buying more food. And these poor players were out running around the pitch doing all these important things, no one really even noticed. And then just to make sure they did notice in the end, they had this big kind of screen, a big TV screen made out of lights.
Yes.
With the cartoon characters playing the whole time. And then when the audience was too busy eating, the people doing the lights got a bit frustrated. They put up little sign saying, clap!
Just a sign of the time. I'm sure the last time I was at a baseball game, and I sort of was half watching a play and missed it, I sat there and waited for the instant replay.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed that you're doing that?
Everybody was glued to the TV rather than the game.
Now, there are different kinds of fans at a baseball game. There are some fans who come, little old ladies, you know, who come to virtually every game of the season, and they know what's going on. They're watching. I don't have to walk around and buy the popcorn when we're at a game, because, you know, I want to pay attention to what's going on. To some people, every game is intensely interesting, even what you would consider a boring game. Let me read just a brief section from Roger Angel's book on baseball called The Summer Game, because I think it helps answer that question. There are lots of answers to the question about why is it so boring to some of us and exciting to others. But here's the way he describes it. I have watched many other sports, and I have followed some, football, hockey, tennis, with eagerness, but none of them yields these permanent interior pictures, not the instant replay, but the permanent interior pictures, these ancient and precise excitements. Baseball, I must conclude, is intensely remembered because only baseball is so intensely watched. Now again, not by all fans. You know, we've all sat at baseball games where we're convinced that some of the fans are there simply to drink lots of beer, and as the game progresses, they yell louder and louder and more profanely at the umpires or the opposing pitchers. And to the one who is intensely watching, and that's irritating, but we forgive them because they're out at the ballpark instead of watching on television. The game forces intensity upon us, even where the Padres play. In the ballpark, scattered across an immense green, each player is isolated in our attention, utterly visible, you know, unlike those interior linemen in a football game. What is certain in baseball is that someone, perhaps several people, will fail. They will be searched out, caught in the open, and defeated, and there will be no confusion about it or sharing of the blame. This is sure to happen because what baseball requires of its athletes, of course, is nothing less than perfection, and perfection cannot be eased or divided. Every movement of every game, from first pitch to last out, is measured and recorded against an absolute standard, and thus each success is also a failure. Credit that strikeout to the pitcher, but also count it against the batter's average. Mark his run unearned because the left fielder bobbled the ball for an instant and the runner moved up. Tension is screwed tighter and tighter as the certain downfall is postponed again and again, so that when disaster does come, a half-topped infield hit, a walk on a close 3-2 call, a low drive up the middle that just eludes the diving shortstop, we rise and cry out. It is a spontaneous, inevitable, irresistible reaction. Some of us resonate to that, and others do not.
You asked a minute ago if we thought that baseball would continue to be the number one, say, truly American sport.
Yeah.
And I'd like to give my opinion as a middle-aged woman. I loved basketball. I played it in college. But over the years, we've all watched basketball become kind of the battle of the giants. As the boys get taller and taller and taller, now they're 7'1", 7'2". It's lost a little bit of the dexterity that we played when we were in college, because the boys can just practically reach in and put it in, you see. They hustle on the court, but if you've ever watched Will Chamberlain, who's got the greatest stats of anybody in L.A., we just think he's, you know, the greatest of all. But he's like a big old giraffe walking down the thing and just putting it in. So basketball really has changed in the years that we went to college. Football, I used to love to go and watch UCLA play USC. That was the biggest one in California. But I've watched that change too, because it's become so much more violent. And I think that even parents of the day talk, and commentators talk about sort of the violence of football. Well, you know, the world is more violent all over, and some of it's carried over into football. Plus, from a woman's standpoint, unless I'm down there and I'm really close up in front, half the time I don't know who has the ball. You know, like you say, it's the lineman up there. But baseball is still pure baseball. The violence hasn't come into it except once in a while they have a rhubarb, but that's always been in baseball. And it's not the changing of the stature of the men, it's just the men have just become better athletes. You know, they're more sophisticated in their early training. And I know that it's a little slower, but I think it's a beautiful game to watch because it's pure dexterity. You see, it isn't size and it isn't violence. It's just pure, good, muscular dexterity of watching these men hit the ball. And it's so exciting to see them slide into baseball. I really don't think, from a woman's standpoint, that baseball will ever be usurped by some of these other sports in America.
Well, those are good observations.
This last summer, I got a chance to see baseball from a couple different points of view. My favorite thing, I was in St. Louis going to seminary, the pre-seminary seminary, and the first day game that they had, there was about 15 of us that said, we're going. I mean, there was just no way. We're going. We got the 250, you get to sit in the bleacher and you get to watch a ball game. I mean, what else is there? So we went there. And like everybody's just saying, there was a fellowship of all being there. You could relax, you didn't have to, you know, keep wondering what was going on. You didn't even really have to look at the instruments of the bleachers and the under it, and said, well, it's anyway.
Yeah.
But then later on in the summer, I took a job working at the ballpark as a beer vendor. And I got to see from a more detached viewpoint what we were talking about, different fans' viewpoints, and there's the drunks, and there's the... But I don't think too many people really plan on going to the ballpark to get drunk. The prices are too ridiculous, the ones.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a planned outing.
They go to drink, some of them.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe not to get drunk, yeah.
We had to help a few people out. It was just, when you're standing up there and you're looking at the whole, you concentrate more on the fans when you're... When you're a beer vendor, I only got to see like the last inning. And so you can see all these different people with all these different reactions to what's going on down there. You'll hear who's up. And it's like when Lou Brock was going to his 3,000 hit, you know. And when Lou Brock came up, you could just see the, you know, everybody's face light up, you know, and there's a big chant, Lou, Lou, Lou. And it was really neat. And that's one thing that I would concur with lady over here, that baseball, I think, will always be the American game, because it's a game I think that everybody can identify with. It's a game not like football, where you have to be big, like basketball, where you have to be tall. It's a game where you can play it and enjoy it. You know, you might never make major leagues, but you can enjoy it a lot more easily than you can enjoy playing football or basketball, where everybody had an equal chance of enjoying it.
I think that's a good point, that we can all have fairly realistic daydreams about possibly being up to bat and managing to get a hit off a good pitcher. I do not ever have a fantasy about being able to take a handoff and carry it through the Pittsburgh Steeler line. That just is it requires a certain kind of bulk. And but I have played baseball, and you know, I did want to be a Major League Baseball player when I was a kid.
And David, I really question in the last two congregations I served, everybody is so frequent on football, and I don't sense at all the same emotion for baseball anymore. And if the symbolism we're talking about here is true, I think it says something very says something about our society that's frightening to me.
I think the last few years, as you go by attendance, it's just soaring. The obvious economically, a baseball game is, at least in Chicago, it's 250. I don't know, even the athlete, it's a lot cheaper than any other. There are more games in the season. And there are more nice days in the summer. Sure. But one thing I do wonder about is, you were talking about vicarious participation, everyone fantasizes hitting a pitch, but I think there's a lot of, one thing that's different about baseball than football is that you have farm teams instead of college ball. I mean, there's college baseball, but it's not that popular.
Yeah.
No one goes to college games. And baseball is only really enjoyed on when you're a little kid, and then when you're on that major league level. In college, you have, I mean, in football, you have the major leagues and the college and high school, and they're all attended, and you can participate in all three of those levels.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that helps out football a lot.
Yeah. But that's another point, too, that you're talking about the minor leagues and the farm teams, is that little towns have the opportunity to claim their own professional team. They might not be major, but they're professional.
Yeah.
You know, and that gives them that gives the town an identity.
But we've lost a lot of, you know, the sandlot ball. I think the football, and you know, at least now I see on the streets the kids are playing football.
Yeah. Yeah, it used to be that there were 60 professional teams in Ohio. Now there are two, Cleveland Indians and the Cincinnati Reds. Pardon? Is there Columbus now? Okay, good. That's been changed three. Sorry. But you've noticed more of the younger people play football in contrast to baseball. One way of thinking about those two sports, some people have described football as the game of corporate America. The whole team functions together. There's the game plan that's worked out in advance. On every play, every player participates. You know, all the moves are charted in advance for what everyone is supposed to do. Baseball is the game of an association of individuals. That is, you're separated out there, spaced out on the field. It's the batter all alone against the pitcher. If he strikes out, nobody else's fault. If the pitcher strikes him out, it's the pitcher's achievement. If the outfielder makes a diving catch to save the ball game in the left of the ninth, there's that individual accomplishment in a way that football doesn't have it. But baseball is sometimes viewed as a kind of a pastoral game. It's slower, it's more relaxed, it's less violent, it's got these different shaped green spaces. Everyone has their little bit of turf that they protect. And this matter of the American cult of the individual standing or falling on his own merits, as opposed to the Southern California corporate mentality. And maybe that's a couple of the values that are being represented by these games. And if there's a shift toward football, maybe that's a sign of what's happening elsewhere in the culture.
The other thought is, if baseball is an American medicine, how significant it was for Jackie Robinson to break into the game. It must have been a tremendous, I don't remember, I guess, but, it must have been a tremendous symbolic
breakthrough.
Pastor, I remember him because I went to UCLA with him.
Yeah,
and I remember when he played on the UCLA team, and how thrilled all of us alone were that he was the one that was able to break in. It was exciting. He was also an excellent football player.
Right.
I don't know, I came in late, I hadn't heard anything about soccer.
Yeah, we...
Are we ruling that out, or...
No, not at all. We mentioned it, but...
Okay, I come from Portland, and it's a heavy soccer town. We have our baseball is not all that good, it's coming up. But we have a pretty heavy soccer town, also with Bill Walton, who's a pretty famous basketball
player. Yeah.
But this is what I have seen growing by leaps and bounds. Now, is this an isolated phenomenon in our part of the country, or...
No, I don't think so.
It's really big in Minnesota, too.
Yeah.
I think that's a matter, that's a lot of that is economics. A lot of high schools are going to soccer instead of football because it's a lot easier to put somebody, give somebody a couple balls and a pair of shorts in the outfitting for football.
I've seen several advantages in that, okay, this matter of size. This is a game of dexterity.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a game of, it's a very poor TV game. You just about have to be there in the stadium to watch it.
Well, Todd's
instant replay doesn't, unless you split your screen up into a whole bunch of little, the action is going all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think that soccer is growing in this country. I have no idea whether it will ever eclipse football or rival it in any way, because that is deeply entrenched in our cultural system too. But it is a game that can be played by people of different physiques. More economical. It makes a lot more sense. It's a game one could play for a longer period of time in one's life. It makes more sense than football does in many ways.
Another way in which it's more economical is tickets are a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And they haven't bought all the season tickets yet. Yeah.
I think one thing that's changed over the past couple of years is the free agents. People can negotiate the contract. And to me, one thing that I find interesting is that even people in the game, fellow players and managers and owners and so forth, are saying this is not good for the game. They are looking at this and they're saying, let's go back to the basics, you know, the draft or whatever, trade, whatever, let's keep it more pure, more whatever term you want to use. But and then you have two people like over the Yankees that can buy everybody in sight, including probably all of New York if you wanted to.
Of course, we Louisiana Pacific just bought the Portland Timbers, so advertising feature.
Had a very interesting discussion in my class about this matter of the owners and what they're doing to the game by agreeing to pay such high salaries for players. Pete Rose makes $800,000 a year for playing baseball. The class was condemning George Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees, for trying to buy a pennant, just blatantly going out there and buying Reggie Jackson and Catfish Hunter and all the rest, and thought that was a bad thing for the game and owners shouldn't be pouring money in to do that. About half an hour later, we were discussing our local favorite, Calvin Griffith, the owner of the Minnesota Twins, who is legendary for being a tight-fisted, miserly owner. He's the only,
among other things,
but he's the only Major League Baseball owner for whom this is his only source of livelihood, George Steinbrenner.
Bill Beck
has had investments in horse racing as well.
Yeah, but I think
you may have sold that out. No,
really, I think he's really dependent on the wife.
The wife
make it a wages.
Okay, two of them. I corrected. Anyway, here are all these Minnesota college students condemning Calvin Griffith for not paying Rod Carew enough money to Rod Carew would stay. Because here, Gene Autry bought Rod Carew, and when Gene Autry, the owner of the California Angels, called his business manager and said, were you able to agree on a contract with Carew? He said, yep. Autry said, good, and he hung up. He didn't even ask how many millions he was going to have to pay for Rod Carew. And Twins have lost most of their good players in the last few years because they can't get enough money from Calvin Griffith, so they go elsewhere. Well, right now, with six games left in the season, California's with Rod Carew, our beloved Rod Carew, is in first place, but the Twins are in second, a bunch of nobodies.
Baltimore
three games behind.
Let's see, and then one player on the Baltimore Orioles, 10 games in first place.
Yeah. That's right.
But they want a lot of players to be Angels, too.
That's right.
The Angels rely on Bobby Rich and Don Baylor, and those are two. They came up through the Orioles farm system, you know, they were Orioles from the...
Yeah.
And so that really bugs Oriole fans, too,
because
Orioles are another poor, poor team.
Well, Reggie Jackson was in the world.
But that's
Is baseball affected by the kind of, somebody mentioned, the kind of ethnic groups that are playing it? I know my mom, I just gives her away a little bit, some of the things that I guess are considered racist, but she used to talk about the Minnesota Gophers football, how they used to be all Minnesota boys, and now they recruit all these people from down south. And
professional baseball in America has been a kind of white Anglo-Saxon bastion, and it still carries that aura to it. It was only in 1947 that Jackie Robinson became the first black major league player, and only last year did we get the first black manager, although we had lots of good Hispanic and black players. But the game has included ethnic Americans from virtually every ethnic background. The names of baseball players, if you can read them when they aren't hyphenated in the box scores, are just ludicrous and fun.
Does anybody know any Oriental from baseball?
Yeah. Pardon? What did you say?
Does anybody know any Orientals in Major League Baseball except in Japan? I don't think I've ever seen a Japanese or Chinese.
Okay, there we go.
Why do you think baseball got to be so big in Japan?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Do they say anything about their nationality and the family? Is that about it?
There are a few places, you know, Japan, Cuba, Venezuela, Mexico, where Philippines and Taiwan, where baseball has caught on. And if we're claiming cultural reasons for fascination for baseball here, why, there may be similar kinds of things there. I think we can't pursue that right now because there's going to be another meeting in here in 5 minutes. Maybe some of you came too early for that and inadvertently found yourself in the hot stove league. But maybe if some of us want to carry on this discussion in other aspects, we can do it another evening. But I did promise that we'd be out of here for another meeting to start at 9:30, and now it's 9:25. Thank you for your contributions. We've only played the first half of the first inning, I think. Maybe we can... Well, take a rain check. We'll try to continue later.